On this episode of The Big Number, we talk about the big matchup between the Pistons and the Timberwolves and their records without Cade Cunningham and Anthony Edwards. We also dive into who should be in that fifth slot for all NBA first team. And to round things out, we take a look at the blockbuster Lakers-Thunder matchup on Thursday night. All this coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we do this every Wednesday here at Yahoo Sports with my man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on?
Tom, can I tell you the truth, an honest thing, an admission here? Oh,
yeah.
I was worried when I woke up this morning that you had set the template for the show and had our rundown and our premise. And then I was going to do all the prep work, and then I was going to show up and you were going to say, actually, April Fools, we're talking about something different, and I was going to have to do a whole different show. And I got a little worried about it because, like, I know you're not a jerk, but it's the day for jerks. So I was a little concerned about it, and I'm very, very pleased to find out that that's not the case.
Actually, we are not doing the show that I sent you.
No! So,
yeah.
I spoke
that was all a ruse.
Yet again, Devine, you idiot. All right. Well, I think I'm ready, but maybe I'm not. But let's put up some numbers, Tom. Hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
I'm just kidding. That was an April Fool's joke. There you go. It is a double April Fool's joke. I was just kidding. Sorry, Deb, but we are doing what we talked about last night because I think it's a fascinating topic. This week's big number is 733. That is the win percentage of the Detroit Pistons this season without Cade Cunningham. The win over the Toronto Raptors on Tuesday set their win-loss record at 11-4. Without their best player, Cade Cunningham, their superstar has been out with a partially collapsed lung. And I think a lot of Detroit fans were probably a little nervous about how their grip on the top seed in the Eastern Conference would go with, you know, James Harden in Cleveland. You got Boston with Jason Tatum and the New York Knicks, of course. And yet they've pulled away. And I think this is not just Cade Cunningham, a story about them, because with Cade Cunningham, they're actually slightly worse in win percentage. 11-4 is a 733 win percentage. And then 44-17 with Cade Cunningham in uniform is a win percentage of 721. But I bring this all up because this is happening a lot with the best players in the league. Is over there on Thursday night, Amazon Prime is hosting this Minnesota Timberwolves-Detroit Pistons matchup. And Anthony Edwards has had the same story. Anthony Edwards, when he's been out this season, the Minnesota Timberwolves are 10-6, slightly better win percentage with him off the floor than when he's on the floor. And Dan, I feel like this is kind of one of those issues that we're seeing around the league where it's hard to peg the MVP conversation. It's hard to peg the first team All-NBA or the top five in MVP because a lot of these candidates, every time we think when they get hurt or they're sidelined and their team's going to suffer, it really hasn't been the case. And so I'm interested to see how this Pistons team faces off against Minnesota on Thursday night without Cade Cunningham still. He's got 60 games played according to the NBA's player participation policy with at least 20 minutes in those 60 games, counting towards the 65-game rule. He's not going to play on Thursday. And I do think that, Dan, it's one of these phenomenons that we're seeing with Wemby. Without Wemby, the Spurs are 10-5. Without Luka, this is probably the worst off-court team. The Lakers without Luka is 7-6. Without SGA, the Thunder are 8-4. Without Jokic, the Nuggets are 10-6. And without Jaylen Brown, the Boston Celtics are 8-1. So collectively, it's basically a 55-win team. That's how you like prorated over 82 games. And so this matchup on Thursday with no Cade Cunningham, but with Ant Edwards, I wanted to kind of like open up the discussion about, I feel like Ant Edwards and Cade Cunningham both feel like they have pretty good cases to be first team All NBA, but I don't know if this whole off-court stuff is complicating matters for you. What are you most looking forward to in this matchup with now Anthony Edwards back from his injury?
Okay, yeah. So a couple of different things there. One, just in the on-court matchup, just a quick thing is like the Wolves' ability to score. Because, you know, you mentioned the Pistons being not only staying above water, but like continuing to pad their lead out in the Eastern Conference without Cade Cunningham. A lot of that is like their defense travels, right? Even, you know, Isaiah Stewart's been out, but they continue to be an elite defensive team with Asar Thompson at the point of attack, Ron Holland up there, Jalen Duren, you know, on the back line. They are just a physical monster of a team. So they held the Wolves last week to, I believe it was 89 points in that matchup when they played on Saturday. It was one of their, 87 points rather, 32% shooting. Julius Randle went 2-for-13 from the floor in that matchup. It was, according to Cleaning the Glasses numbers, the second worst offensive performance of the season for the Timberwolves against that Pistons defense. So obviously, if you want things to be different, you're going to need to score some more points. Anthony Edwards should probably help in that regard. Also, Ayo Dosunmu, the trade deadline pickup that the Wolves had, did not play in that Saturday game either. When he's been out there, he has been an absolute jolt to their team. With him and Ant on the floor, they're scoring about 121 points per 100 possessions, like elite offensive efficiency, small sample, but great offense for the Wolves. And they get out on the break a ton, which is like, if you want to avoid an elite defense in the half court, run past them. And Ayo Dosunmu has been really useful for that and makes Anthony Edwards pick up the pace too. So in that matchup, it's just obviously Ant changes it. I'm wondering how much Ayo Dosunmu changes it. And if the Wolves can kind of like get their offense uncorked against that elite Pistons defense. Broadly, though, I think the point you're making about everybody in this top tier conversation has some version of the same slight against them. On one level, it kind of like it reduces the fraction and you like equal it all out. You like you can cancel it out for everybody, because if you know their teams are still good without them on the floor, then the, oh, well, it's a carry job thing becomes less of a concern. And you just focus more on in whose presence is the team most elite, right? Like who is having the best impact on their team when they are on the floor. And then you can parse that out. We talked last week about Wemby versus SGA. We've had that conversation with Jokic, with Luka. And now, you know, there's other guys that we can talk about in that regard too. But I think with, you know, when you look at the, you know, and this hypothetical sort of structure, Cade versus Ant. Maybe it's an old timey sort of boomer take, but like the fact that one is the number one seed in his conference and like a high 50s win team, and the other one is slugging it out trying to get out of the play in, like that to me, I think probably will wind up having sway with a lot of voters. Although, as you mentioned, if we're not allowed to vote for Cade Cunningham, which at this point it looks like we might not be able to. Then it opens up kind of a whole sort of can of worms, and a whole lot of other people start vying for that that fifth spot. And Anthony Edwards certainly is somebody that's going to have a real case for it, provided he's able to get over the 65 game mark as well.
Can we just talk a little bit about Jalen Duren? I mean, this guy. I think like when you look at the defense that you say carried, you know, individually carried is the framework you were working with, but I think also just it reminds me a lot of that Derrick Rose Chicago Bulls team, where it was like in 2011 when he won the MVP, whereas like we were all focused on Derrick Rose and what a magical season and story that is. It's up and coming 23-year-old MVP, so electric out on the floor. And then he was backed by this elite defense. And Jalen Duren's like a super, super sized, supercharged Joakim Noah, where he's just a menace defensively. And without Derrick Rose, Jalen Duren is like a 30-10 guy. He had 31 points, 9 rebounds the other night. He's got without Cade Cunningham on the floor, he just has a lot more offensive game than I think we allowed when he's having to share the ball with others. Another heliocentric star in Cade Cunningham. But when you look at the advanced metrics, Jalen Duren isn't just an all-star player. I think you can make a case that if you're a team that's winning 60 games in the Eastern Conference, they're 55-21 right now, with Cade Cunningham missing, broadly speaking, 15-20 games. Jalen Duren has a great All-NBA case himself. And maybe it's not first-team All-NBA, but I think for over this stretch, considering what he does defensively and on the boards and what he's done filling in for Cade Cunningham offensively and getting more touches, Dan, I feel like he's still oddly enough, one of the most underrated players in the league. And I think hopefully Thursday, a lot more people will begin to appreciate how good this dude is and how young he is. And he's going to be one of the great bigs in the league for a very long time.
Let's flesh out that case a little bit, because we'll get in our you know, as we get a little bit further on into the show, some arguments for some other guys for that number five spot. And as you're doing that legwork and I'm going through the research, I'm like, Jalen Duren's, like, I probably wouldn't make that full-throated, full, you know, put my full chest behind that case. But like Jalen Duren, when you filter out for just guys who've played 60 games, so like can get to 65 in that mix for actually being able to be considered, right? Jalen Duren is third in win shares and win shares per 48 minutes. He's fourth in estimated plus minus, sixth in player efficiency rating, eighth in box plus minus, and 10 in both the B-ball indexes, LeBron and Neil Payne's Laker all in one rating. So like we are talking about, and again, in terms of the games played, the minutes played, and the efficiency and effectiveness in that larger sample, like a top 10-ish guy this season. And I think you said like maybe not a first team thing, maybe, but like the argument for the case, we always, this lags a little bit very often, right? Where like you see a guy do it once and you need to see it more often. You need to be able to say, well, okay, once is a fluke. If we see it one or two more times, then we can believe that he's consistently, you know, able to be at that level. But that first season, it's like, well, okay, is that a third team guy? Is that a second, whatever, you know, where do we fit him in? The fact that Duren has forced himself into that spot by, and as you mentioned, continuing to be an offensive like focal point and like a cornerstone when Cade's not on the floor. This, I looked this up on a Databaller, databaller.com. Per 75 possessions without Cade this season, he's still averaging 27 points a game, 27 points per 75 possessions with his free throw attempt way up, like 9 free throw attempts per 75 possessions. Dude. And his true shooting percentage is still elite. So like all of those fundamental things are still there, plus the defense, plus the rebounding, plus the role he's played as that centerpiece for a team that is the number two defense in the NBA. And that's really been their consistent part. Like, the case is a lot better than I think people realize, and probably not for the number five spot on the MVP ballot or the All-NBA ballot. But we've also seen in years past, like when we all acknowledge that a unit is elite and a team is excellent, and the person that we attributed most of the success for that can't be in the awards consideration for one reason or another, somebody else from that team tends to like bump up the rankings a little bit. I'm thinking of the Marcus Smart Defensive Player of the Year a couple years ago when like, in March, it was Robert Williams. And then by April, it was Marcus Smart. But that can happen sometimes, right? And Jalen Duren might wind up being a beneficiary of it, not just in the narrative component, but also like he's earning it on the floor, which is what you'd love to see.
Yeah, he's been sensational. And like I feel for Cade Cunningham, who was just this workhorse all season long and then had this freak accident happen in the middle of the game, and he loses potentially his spot in the MVP conversation, but and it opens up that fifth slot there, and Jalen Duren taking off. While I think he would agree, he loves to see Jalen Duren have this ascension, and like I want my teammate to get better so that even without me, I don't need to in the playoffs have to play 45 minutes in order to carry the offense. He can help me out there. I do think it takes a little bit of the wind out of the sails for his MVP candidacy. Forget the 65 game rule for a second. Someone's got to win that, right? Is the fifth spot on the All NBA and top five MVP. And I can understand why Anthony Edwards is like, dude, did you forget about me? Like, I'm a guy who was second team All NBA twice already. I'm 24 years old and I'm already averaging a career high 29 points per game, gotten more efficient from the floor. And I'm playing in a way tougher conference in terms of the top tier teams. And for Anthony Edwards, I could understand why he's like, I'm that guy. Assuming that he takes care of his bathroom trips on time in the rest of the season. And I do think that Anthony Edwards is a guy that deserves some recognition for potentially being in that All-NBA first team slot. I think you can make a case for a bunch of other players. But I do think that this matchup on Thursday, he can do a lot if he has a huge monster clutch performance in a game in which they really need it against this Detroit Pistons defense. I think he can if he finishes strongly, Dan, I think that Anthony Edwards, while he hasn't taken a step forward as a playmaker in terms of a distributor, I do think that Anthony Edwards can look at his resume and just say, I've become more efficient shooter. I'm not shooting as much, but I'm a now 40% shooter from downtown. Maybe the preeminent perimeter shooter in the league in terms of high volume and efficiency. It's hard to look at what he's done offensively and say, yeah, that guy's not, you know, deserving of being in the top five. So any thoughts here about Anthony Edwards' campaign? And obviously he's been hurt a little bit here. And so now that he's getting back to the floor, his minutes are going to be ramping up. He's not 100% yet. I think he's got a potential to have a monster game on Thursday that will inevitably, as things happen in we're human beings, it might sway us in ways that a big time performance in early November might not stick in our brains come vote time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a what have you done for me lately type of situation. And it has been year over year, right? Like I can remember the argument of like that year where it was Kawhi and Harden and Russ. And, you know, like I was Kawhi blocking Harden at the rim in a late season game. And it was like, well, that's the MVP decider right there. And you're like, well, one play at the end of the season doesn't necessarily do that, but it does. These nights do tend to stick in people's heads. You know, Wemby goes for 41 and 31 minutes against the Bulls. And it's like, well, there you go. Then Shea goes for 47 to beat the Pistons. And it's like, well, okay, now it's swung back. Things swing back and forth. Recency bias is a pretty significant impact on the way that we look at it and think. But I think with the Wolves, it's because like they're sort of, it's funny because the trade like links these two teams, you know, inextricably now. They're the Western Knicks. Like they, you know, you zoom out and look at their resume and you're like, inarguably an excellent team, capable of being elite on both ends of the floor on any given night. Have good matchups against some of the best teams in the NBA, capable of beating anybody on any given night. And also, there will be periods of time where it just seems like they never played basketball together in a five-man unit at all. And that'll often be either at the start of games to get into big holes, or particularly in crunch time, where it's like, how do we generate a good look? And where it's baffling. It's like the Monstars took their talent for 10 minutes and you're like, well, what the hell just happened? And you like in a conference that does have those like absolute heavyweights at the top, that all of a sudden you look up and you're like, not only do I not have home court advantage in round one, like I am like scuffling out to try to get just like above the six. And like, that's where they are right now because of the nature of the competitive situation at the top of the Western Conference. But all of that gets calmed down. Like Houston's a great example of this, right? A week ago, it was like everybody hates everybody. And, you know, maybe Kevin Durant secretly was deriding every one of his teammates and they can't figure out how to play offense. And then all of a sudden they rip off a handful of games in a row and they're right back in the conversation for maybe even getting up to four. Like a few games can go a long way toward calming everything down and then elevating your standing among your peers. And Anthony Edwards is certainly the kind of guy who can walk right back into the lineup, give you 35, four straight games. And all of a sudden, everything looks hunky-dory and we're talking about, oh, right, these guys made the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. And that guy just keeps scoring more and shooting more efficiently every single year of his career. Maybe we should put that guy on the ballot.
Yeah, I could totally see Anthony Edwards just going off for 60 points on Thursday or one of these games the rest of the year and then being like, yep, that's my spot. I wouldn't put it past at Anthony Edwards. Right. Couple things here. I think when I framed this as like when these candidates for the top five MVP or first team all NBA are off the floor, look at these records. This doesn't reconcile how good these guys are and what they mean to their teams. And I think I want to give some spotlight to the article I wrote this week for Yahoo Sports. And I encourage people to read it if you haven't. This stratified NBA, where you have A-League teams, 21 teams that are trying to win, and they've separated themselves from the B-League, all the teams that are tanking, trying to maximize ping pong balls. There are 10 teams already eliminated from postseason competition, even though there is a play-in tournament. 10 teams have already been eliminated from postseason. And when you look at the difference in how the win percentages shake out from the A-League teams compared to the B-League teams, it is like two different leagues. And maybe all of this on-court, off-court, crazy win-loss splits that we're seeing from these superstars where Wemby, when he's not on the floor, the Spurs are 10-5, no SGA, they're 8-4, no Cade Cunningham, they're 11-4. Maybe this is just that they're all being buttressed by these B-League teams, that the Nets, the Jazz, the Grizzlies, the Wizards of the world, they're just beating up on those and compiling those records. When you have so many bad teams in the league, it might be the case that, yeah, a team without Anthony Edwards that still has Julius Randle, DDV, and Rudy Gobert, and Iodesumu, they're going to beat up on most of those nine teams with ease. So go watch, go read that piece, the two leagues, the stratification of the league, because I do think it might have a pretty big impact on the fact that all these teams that we're talking about are still really good without their superstar. So there's that. And then I also want to point out, Dan, there's one team, according to Cleaning the Glass, that has separated themselves from the rest of the pack when it comes to their performance against top 10 net differential teams. So this is another way to look at not the watered down league with nine teams trying to lose games. We're just looking at how teams perform against the top 10 teams in net differential. And there's one team that continues to outperform everybody else in a league of their own. Even with this AB league, there's almost like a superstar, super A league. And it's this one team. It's the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are 15-7 That's against the top 10 teams in the NBA. And their point differential against those top 10 teams is plus 5.1, according to Cleaning the Glass. And San Antonio is in second at not plus 5.1, not 4.1, not 3.1, but they're plus 2.2. So, Dan, this Pistons team, it might look at Anthony Edwards and just laugh and say, we've been doing this all year, whether we have Cade Cunningham or not. And I think that's a big reason why you see JB Bickerstaff as the odds-on favorite or the favorite to win Coach of the Year this year, because he's missed Cade Cunningham for 15 games. And Jalen Duren has made this ascension into an all-NBA player. And they don't seem to have missed a beat after no Malik Beasley last year. This year they have a bunch of injuries, and they're just still destroying not just everybody in the league, but the best teams in the league. They've been outstanding, Dan.
I will say, you plugged something that you wrote. This was not a full Dan Devine joint, but we did a little posse cut roundtable at Yahoo Sports at the beginning of the week where our editors asked us, like, who's the favorite in the East? Who's the favorite in the West? Kind of table setting for the last couple of weeks of the season. And as I would admit, I was late getting to it. I had a thing at my girl's school in the morning, so I got to go see what everybody else's answers were before I wrote mine. Classic, veteran move, just come in right before deadline and see what everybody else said. Nobody had picked the Pistons in the East. It was, here's the argument for the Celtics, here's the argument for the Cavs. And I was like, maybe we could give a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt to the team that has been the number one seed in the conference since, and I checked because I'm a sicko, I went back through like historical league standings every day, since November 7th. The Pistons have not spent one day out of first place in the East since November 7th. And as you mentioned,
wire to wire. That's nuts.
Almost wire to wire. And they've done that with guys missing time, with Cade being out, with everything else. And one of those losses against the top 10 teams there was the other night against Oklahoma City in Oklahoma City, that went to overtime, right? They went to overtime. It was Dennis Jenkins trying to, hit the game winner against, they were down four starters in that game and they still took the Thunder to overtime. Now, yes, OKC was also without Jalen Williams and Isaiah Hartenstein and whatever, but like, this is the core of who that Pistons team is. And like, I get the arguments for the Celtics. I get the arguments for the surging Cavs. A little bit harder to see the argument for the Knicks today. But I think when we look at the Pistons, the argument for this season has been like Cade Cunningham kind of carrying a team of guys that can't create for themselves. The offense is going to fall apart whenever he's not there. And I think what this recent stretch has proven and what your big number today proves is like, there's a lot more in Detroit than maybe people realized. And as certainly more that is going to keep them in consideration or in the thick of these fights as they get into the playoffs. And hopefully they get Cade Cunningham back in full form. We've heard nothing to indicate that he's done for good for the postseason. But what they've shown recently is even without him, that is an awfully tough team that can go toe-to-toe with damn near everybody.
Well, Dan, my fifth slot on this MVP vote or all NBA, because of course you got Wemby, you got Jokic, you got Luka, and you got SGA in those top four spots. I don't think we've talked about the one that I want to have in my fifth slot as of today, as of this recording. It's not Cade Cunningham. It's not Anthony Edwards, but maybe one of your little numbers will shed light on who that player is. I'm curious to see. Dan, coming up after the break, we'll go through your three little numbers, other candidates that deserve some shine in that first team all NBA slot besides Cade Cunningham and Anthony Edwards were facing off on Amazon Prime on Thursday night. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. All right, Dan, this week's big number. Reminder, it is 733. That is the win percentage of the Pistons without Cade Cunningham. Shout out to Jalen Duren, who's carving out a nice little all-NBA case here. But I don't know who you have in your potential fifth slot in the MVP race or the all-NBA, first-team all-NBA. But I have a hankering that you're going to have a similar guy maybe in this three little numbers here. Dan, who would be maybe the strongest case as of now for that fifth slot, or what's the most interesting case for you?
Yeah, well, your mileage may vary. I'm sure there's going to be fans of all different stripes that might argue for the relative strength and weakness of these cases. But we'll throw some numbers out there because, listen, I got some time to kill. Our first little number this week is another three-digit decimal, 0.490, 490. That is how many points per touch Kawhi Leonard is averaging this season for the Los Angeles Clippers. Among the 279 players who have appeared in at least 50 games this season, that 0.490 ranks number one in the NBA in points per touch, which is one way of saying in this metric, nobody has scored more efficiently and more effectively this season than Kawhi Leonard. It's a pretty neat shorthand for him being an absolute elite offensive player this season. Career high, 28.1 points per game, 50-38-90 shooting splits. He's shooting 52% from mid-range this season, which when you watch Kawhi Leonard take mid-range jumpers and you see how hard they are, that's kind of wild to see. He is also doing all that while being tied for the league lead in steals and just outside the top 10 in deflections. The defensive impact still very much there for him. Number we've talked about before, this sort of cleaning the glasses on off swing, right? The idea of how much does your team outscore the opposition when you're on the floor versus how much do they get outscored when you are off the floor? Back of the envelope math for like how important you are to your team's fortunes when you're out there. Kawhi Leonard plus 13.9 points per 100, which among big minute guys, as we talked about before, that's third in the NBA behind only Victor Wembanyama and Nikola Jokic, which is pretty good company for this kind of conversation. With Kawhi on the floor this season, the Clips are 35-25. Without him, 4-12. Since their disastrous start, they have the third best net record and net rating in the Western Conference. They've been absolutely dominant with him on the floor, and they are in position. They're going to be back in the postseason mix. I believe they're eighth right now. I probably can't get up to a top six spot, but I don't know that anybody's particularly excited to see them in the if they were able to get out of the play-in tournament. So your caveats. That 6-21 start happened. Clippers are locked into the play-in tournament. They're not getting up out of the top six. And there's that like small, minuscule matter of the like ongoing off-court investigation into whether or not the Clippers circumvented the salary cap by funneling illicit money to Kawhi and his uncle through a non-Clippers business. That's still all there. That's all going on. However, just the on-court conversation, what do you make of the idea of Kawhi Leonard, all-NBA first team?
He's my guy for that fifth slot. All those caveats and the off-court stuff that you mentioned apply for sure. I don't know if it applies in this context of how good he's been on the floor, but I got a chance to work that that game on Tuesday night against the Blazers, which was a postseason game, and I was terrified going into that for the Blazers. I've been terrified because Kawhi Leonard is as good as he's ever been. And I think you can, for him, for Kawhi, like if I were to tell you, Dan, you could have one player right now for your postseason run to build your team around. I think Kawhi has as good of a case as any of those other players, Luka, Wemby, SGA, Jokic. Of all of the other candidates, whether it's Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Jaylen Brown, Cade Cunningham, all of those other players, I just don't see how I would pick any of them over Kawhi Leonard right now. The Blazers escaped the grip of Kawhi Leonard's claws in that game on Tuesday. Great shooting, just awesome job by Denny Avdia. But Kawhi Leonard, I think, strikes the fear in opponents in ways that I don't know if Luka is more terrifying to go against or SGA is more terrifying to go against. Kawhi's a machine, dude. He is so good. And when you talk about that impact, the on-court, off-court impact, the whole he's the anomaly of like they're 4-12 without Kawhi Leonard. A lot of that was early in the season when he got hurt. But dude, like we talk about all these teams that are doing as good or better without their superstar. You can't say the same about Kawhi Leonard. He's got 53 straight games with at least 20 or more points. Like talk about metronome. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander broke the Wilt Chamberlain record, but we can't ignore Kawhi Leonard, who has been as consistent, as available as any superstar over the last 4 or 5 months in the NBA. And I'm curious to see how this shakes out, the vote shakes out, because I think it's Kawhi for me in that fifth slot, and I think it's a tier above everybody else.
Yeah, since December 20th, so about 40 games, 43 games, Clippers are 31-12 in the games that Kawhi has played since then. That's, you know, like a high 50s win pace. You're right. You know, it's going to be a question. We talked earlier about the recency bias component. That early in the year stuff did happen, and the Clippers did wind up basically having to drastically reimagine their team. So it's a question of like, you know, do you value somebody who got their team off to a stronger start? You know, that's certainly an argument that can be made. But one quote that I loved,
he was hurt, right? Part of that, the swoon was a lot of just no Kawhi. So there's that. But your point is taken, is that it wasn't just 6-21. It was a little longer after that, that they just weren't getting into high gear. And so there is some of that, that Kawhi deserves some of that blame. But man, he's been so ridiculous this season.
Absolutely. And I wrote a couple weeks ago about sort of that ascent for Kawhi and the Clippers at Yahoo Sports. So the numbers are out of date in that, but the ideas are not, if you want to go find that. But one of the things that I loved in it was the kicker quote that I used was Darius Garland, who just got there at the trade deadline, you know, wasn't able to play for it right away, but has been pretty sensational since he's got on the court with them. And they asked about the idea of getting used to playing with Kawhi. And he said, quote, "It's pretty easy to play with him because everybody's afraid of him." And I think that's about, that kind of neatly sums up what you're talking about as far as Kawhi Leonard's his candidacy there. But he is not the only interesting candidate for this fifth spot, whether on your MVP ballot or your All-NBA first team ballot. Second little number this week is 4. That is how many players in the NBA this season are averaging at least 25 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists per game. One of them is Giannis, who will not play enough games to qualify for year-end award inclusion. The other 3 are Nikola Jokic, lock, Luka Doncic, lock, and Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics. You push the filters up to even higher, 28-7-5, because that's where Jaylen Brown's actual numbers are this season. And it's just him and Luka, which is pretty good company. We've spoken before about some of the peculiarities of Jaylen Brown's MVP case, All-NBA case, chiefly the numbers that say that the Celtics have been about twice as good with him off the floor than when he's on it. Off the floor, plus 11.2 points per 100 possessions, on the floor, plus 5.3, which is wild. And the various like advanced metrics that say that there's all these other reasons why the Celtics are as good as they are. You know, they point to Derek White having a greater impact all around than Jaylen Brown, or the offensive rebounding, their three-point volume, the way they avoid turnovers. There's a lot of things that go into what makes the Celtics as good as they've been this season. It's worth considering, though, just as we're making arguments, that maybe some of that is missing the forest for the trees and like overlooking, again, a guy who's able to put up 28-7-5 every night and like be the load-bearing column that allows for everybody else to be in their appropriate role, right? Like, would Nemias Keita, Baylor Shireman, Jordan Walsh, Hugo Gonzalez, all these guys, like, would they be able to star as effectively in their smaller roles if there wasn't a guy using like Luka level workload pretty efficiently while also being like a better playmaker than he's ever been before and a pretty good all-around defender too? Like, the fact that Jaylen Brown's been able to scale up into that monster role, I think, allows everybody else to not have to as much. And that has had a lot of value for a Celtics team that many of us, hand up, equipped had the idea that they were going to have a gap year. And then they enter Wednesday's action at 50-25 in the number 2 spot in the East. And since the return of Jason Tatum, a lot of people's pick for the best team in the Eastern Conference. So the numbers, you know, looking at points, rebounds, and assists, not fancy numbers. But 28-7-5 on a 55-win team that's a number 2 seed are big numbers. So, Tom, what does that do for you, the idea of Jaylen Brown's candidacy for this fifth spot.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that that Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser are picking him for MVP. Like they famously went on PTI and said that Jaylen Brown's our guy. Because I think if this was 2006, I think he would have an outstanding case. Because without the availability of the advanced metrics and without those things clouding the picture, the top down, the headline metrics, like you point out, are outrageous in his favor. The expectations coming into this year that they've completely surpassed those expectations. Jaylen Brown has been available for them. He's not playing in every single game, but I think he's missed 9 games. And the Boston Celtics, I mean, he is the face of that team and carried them in the kind of like narrative standpoint of that them getting to that record. But then, like, it's not 2006 anymore. And if you don't, and I'm pretty sure that Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser are not looking at Data Baller. They're not looking at Cleaning the Glass. They're not looking at dunksandthrees.com like us nerds are doing. But I do think that those are interesting data points to look at. And if you're making the case for Jaylen Brown, it is a lot of the stuff that I think from a narrative standpoint or from just like a headline standpoint is really convincing. But it's hard to get past the fact that they're 8-1 without Jaylen Brown on the floor. And a lot of those wins are against those A-League teams. They've won, I think, 5 straight games without Jaylen Brown when he's missed a game here and there. And Joe Mazzulla is a wizard, not in the capital W sense, but he's just the way that he's built this team, Dan, is the low turnover, the winning the possession game, slowing the game down, and just playing extremely smart basketball on the margins that you can plug and play anybody. And they're going to be really tough to beat. And Derek White, a guy that I think is kind of the Shane Battier of our time, is just a guy that's not going to score 30 points or jump out at you at any sort of athleticism, but he just does all the little things. And this is just a team full of guys who do all the little things. I can't get there with Jaylen Brown as being the fifth slot there. I know he will be in the fifth slot on a lot of ballots. I think he'll probably be higher than that on a couple here and there, in the MVP vote or in the all NBA, just getting more votes than say Luka Doncic if people have a problem with his defense. I think you're going to see a lot of Jaylen Brown love. It's just, I can't get there. I think he's an all NBA player, probably third team on my ballot. But I do think that when you look at Jaylen Brown's advanced metrics, they don't scream first team all NBA, but the more box score or more traditional metrics, absolutely he deserves to be in the top.
Yeah, the we'll move past it, but I think the counter argument to that would be they do all the little things right because you got one guy doing the huge big things pretty well. And the important part too, like the Celtics for years, the you know, rap on them has been it's all jump shots. They don't get any, you know, they don't get any downhill at all. They're not enough, you know, in the rim. Jaylen Brown tied with Denny Avdia for the league lead in drives to the baskets per game, drives to the basket per game rather, and you know, scores on about 70% of those drives. Like he's been their constant source of get downhill rim pressure, that I think again opens up a lot of those driving kicks, gives a lot of opportunities for those guys to get the ball moving. So there's something to be said for that. Also, something to be said for, as you mentioned, availability and volume of the amount of consistency and availability. Our third and final little number this week, 2,621. That's how many minutes Kevin Durant has played this season. That is a really big number. It's the second largest minutes load in the entire NBA behind only his teammate, Amen Thompson. I'm going to say that again because it feels like it's worth repeating. 37-year-old Kevin Durant, now 7 years removed from rupturing his Achilles tendon, is second in the NBA in minutes played. And he's doing a lot with them, right? Just under 26 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5 assists per game, characteristically pristine shooting, 52-41-88 shooting splits. It kind of doesn't matter what the defense is and who's around him. He's just going to do 50-40-90 flirting for the rest of his life. The Rockets offense we've talked about before is shaky. The fundamental underpinning of it was really the offensive rebounding. And you had like, you know, Godzilla, Steven Adams down there as a huge part of that. And they've been real shaky since he went down. But for the season, even with Adams or Alperen Şengün off the floor, they still score like a near top 5 offense with Kevin Durant on the court. and like a below average offense with him off of it. So there is a way to look at this, including through some of the advanced numbers: fifth in win shares, eighth in value over replacement player, 10th in EPM among guys that have played 60 games. There's a way to look at this and say, Iron Man, driving force and best player on a 50-win team that still has like a teeny tiny chance of getting into top four in the West, despite not having a point guard all year. And, you know, just for fun, since narrative is occasionally fun to sprinkle in because there's nothing wrong with telling a story, he also did that while passing Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. So, might be a long shot, Tom, but Kevin Durant's pretty good at long shots. What do you think of the prospect of KD making his, let me count here, 7th first-team All-NBA this season?
Yeah, you mentioned all the metrics, the advanced metrics. I'll just reiterate for everyone in the media that that does love these kind of advanced metrics. One of the go-tos is that EPM you talked about, estimated plus minus. They have this kind of estimated wins, which is basically your actual performance this season, incorporating how many minutes you've played, who are the best players in production, like in totality this season. Number one is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Number two is Nikola Jokic. Number three is Luka Doncic. Victor Wembanyama comes in at number four. And my favorite candidate for that fifth slot is Kawhi Leonard at number five. But right behind him at number six is 37-year-old Kevin Durant. You're absolutely right. One of the most fascinating candidacies that is in the NBA for that fifth slot because of the fact that he is 37, and that's not this isn't like a handout award for AARP NBA players. This is who has been the best five players in the NBA this year. And the dude has scored the fourth most points in the league. Like he's been available. And if we are going to value that durability and that, if we want to champion guys who are available and playing every single night, you have to look at Kevin Durant and just be in awe of what he's doing this season. And yeah, you're right. They have had no point guard this year without Fred VanVleet. They haven't had Alperen Şengün for a big chunk of the season. They haven't had Steven Adams for most of this season. And yet, right? And yet they are still in that top tier. They've locked in the playoff hunt, and this is top six right now, but I guess they haven't technically locked in the top six, but they're in the hunt for the number four seed in the Western Conference despite all those injuries. And Kevin Durant is a huge reason why. Advanced metrics love him, the box score metrics love him, and a pretty ridiculous story that with all the love around LeBron James, we're kind of overlooking how ridiculous it is that at 37 years old, Kevin Durant, we talk about how LeBron looks like he could play till he's 50 years old. Well, the same thing with Kevin Durant. The fact that he's top four in the NBA in scoring at age 37 is ridiculous.
Now, does that translate to getting all the way up to All-NBA first team? Maybe not. As we've established, there are, we've talked about a handful of interesting candidates there, and there are more that can be considered. You know, we didn't really mention a guy like Jalen Brunson, or we barely touched on the Cavs. You know, Donovan Mitchell could certainly have an argument for it. You know, there's a number of guys that you can go through here. I think what this indicates, though, is like there's a ton. Like the depth of talent at the top of the league is wild right now, and this is the time of year where an awful lot of it is going to get featured. So buckle up. We're having a good time as we head toward the playoffs.
Yeah, buckle up because we have another ridiculous matchup here on Thursday. We talked about the Ant Edwards and the Detroit Pistons, but there's another one that not just you and I have circled on our calendars, but I think the rest of the league, including the San Antonio Spurs, are eagerly awaiting to see what happens on Thursday. We're going to talk about Oklahoma City Thunder and the Los Angeles Lakers facing off on Thursday. Right after the break, we'll get into that. Okay, I think we're going to have pretty much close to full squad on both sides of this one. Lakers, Thunder, Thursday night. I can't wait, dude. I cannot wait for this game. Luka and SGA are two of the most unstoppable offensive scorers in different ways. You know, Luka's more beyond the three-point line. SGA is in that mid-range area and kind of a driver. Not as much of a slasher and kicker like Luka Doncic is, but in terms of offensive engines, Anyone who knows ball is going to love watching this matchup between two of the best and doing incredible things lately. Anything you can do, I can do better. 9:30 Eastern on Thursday night, Lakers Thunder. They're going to be playing, the Thunder are going to be playing their third game in four nights. I'm a little worried about that. They're just going to be a little tired legs going against the Lakers, but the Lakers have been dealing with a tough schedule as well. Dan, this is kind of a playoff game before the playoffs because the San Antonio Spurs are three games back. They own the tiebreaker, so it's really just two games back of the Oklahoma City Thunder. So this has huge implications, massive implications, not just on the Western Conference race between 3, 4, and 5, but also at the very top. If the Spurs are going to win the Western Conference and thereby, I think, having Victor Wembanyama win the MVP, I think this game on Thursday night could really move the needle in either direction. So an incredible matchup here. I'm very excited for it. And kind of we're going to get another one of these soon. So this is kind of like a mini playoff series ahead of the playoffs. So yeah, I'm locked in, dude.
Yeah. And there's like, you know, the thing that you mentioned that you be at this time of year when you get these marquee, these showcase games, it's an opportunity for players and teams to kind of leave a lasting impression, right? And we haven't had that in this particular matchup this season. You know, the Thunder and Lakers have played twice this season, but there have been guys missing in all of those games. You know, there was a 121-92 Thunder blowout in November. No LeBron, no Jalen Williams, no Lou Dort in that game. And then there was a 119-110 Thunder win in February. No Luka, no SGA in that one. So hopefully, you know, like the Lakers have you know, gotten their full teams together, as you mentioned. The Thunder recently getting Jalen Williams back, now with Isaiah Hartenstein back in the line. Like they've got, hopefully, their whole lineup together, which still has played, I believe, under 100 total minutes together this season, the starting five of last year's championship team. So the Thunder are still, you know, getting their reps together. So hopefully you'll get to see both of these teams at full strength going at one another. And that's about as good a matchup as you can have in the NBA right now, because since January 18th, which is like that, it's a very specific time frame, but JJ Redick has kind of pointed to that as like when the Lakers kind of started to get their stuff together mid-January. OKC since that date, 25-8. The Lakers, 26-10. OKC fifth in net rating since that time. The Lakers ninth, and both teams excellent on both ends of the floor. So yeah, you've got the elite, you know, SGA and Luka doing like, can you top this? Anything you can do, I can do better stuff on the offensive end. You mentioned them both being elite engines. They are second and third in the NBA in points created per game, which when you add together what they score and what their assists generate, behind only Jokic. So yeah, two of the top three guys there. And just, it's very fun to like look at Luka's numbers and am I sorting this right? Did I actually add it up right? His last 13 games, he's averaging 39.8 points, 7.8 rebounds, and 7.3 assists per game. He's shooting 39.8% from three on 13.5 attempts per game over his last 13 games. It's like, it is, you know, I think we get inured to the idea of video game numbers. Like, this is preposterous stuff that Luka is putting together down the stretch here. It is about as strong a closing kick to the MVP race as you can imagine, I guess, outside of the 7'5" dude who's making a similarly strong one, and the guy who won it last year, who just scored 47 to win a game in overtime at home too. It's a remarkable display of talent right now. And here's hoping you get these teams at full strength and fully available, because the best case scenario, I think, for a neutral fan is this is a precursor for what a series would look like. The last team that beat the Thunder in the playoffs was Luka, was surrounded by, you know, wings and defenders who could muck up the passing lanes and force the Alex Carusos and Lou Dorts of the world. Or I guess Alex Caruso wasn't in that series at that point. It was Josh Giddey, but the complimentary Thunderers to make shots. Let's find out. Let's see. Let's see what happens if you got a full strength Lakers team that can do some of that.
The fact that they've done this, the Lakers have done this without Marcus Smart in the lineup for the last week or so with the ankle injury, has been all the more impressive. And I hope he gets to play, because I kind of have this like Lou Dort is kind of like the young Marcus Smart out there, who's just like super physical, exaggerates contacts, always on the floor doing like just crazy stuff. So I feel like I would like to see Marcus Smart be healthy for this one, but I can't like... I'm nitpicking at this point. The fact that we're going to have Austin Reeves, LeBron James, Luka Doncic going against this Oklahoma City Thunder team that should have everybody healthy, or at least it looks like with all those guys back. This is what I've been talking about ad nauseum for the past several years, is how rare it is that we get these full squad matchups. And when we do have it, I think we all, as media, we need to just put it on a pedestal and just remind the folks to watch these games when they're full squad. This is what it's all about. It should feel like a playoff game on Thursday, and it absolutely will, for me, feel like a playoff matchup. And this is what happened with regularity in the 90s, early 2000s, is you didn't have to keep looking at the injury report to see if the superstars are going to be playing in the matchup. So when we do have this, we need to just like yell from the top of the mountain that we are going to have one of the most epic nights in the NBA season with this matchup here with the Lakers and the Thunder. So implore everybody to clear off the calendar for that one. I'm excited for it. So Dan, I'm working on something with regard to the full squad stuff, because just looking at the numbers that I have here, it is so rare that we get something like this. How rare that is, stay tuned. I'm going to be publishing that, I think, in the near future. So stay tuned for that. But I'm locked in for this one, and I can't wait to see it, because we haven't gotten full squad between these two teams. And we're not just going to get it, hopefully, on Thursday, but Tuesday as well, in a kind of a rematch ahead of the postseason. We talked about it last week, Dan, that Wemby, I think, has an underrated pathway to get MVP, and it could start on Thursday night with this matchup, not necessarily with the Spurs, but because the Lakers are playing as well as they have been against this Oklahoma City Thunder team, Wemby, I think, is going to be keeping an eye on this one too. So go check out that episode last week if you haven't, the SGA versus Wemby MVP case. Wemby is campaigning for himself, and SGA and Luka don't seem to be too entertained by that. Although, who knows, if Wemby didn't do it, maybe they wouldn't be trying to zig when he's zagging. So we'll see. Dan, anything you want to tout here before we go in terms of the stuff you've been churning out over at Yahoo Sports, which, man, this is high time right now. We're getting ready for the postseason. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah. Last thing I did was about, you know, SGA making his MVP case, where he says, I'll let the game speak for me. My game speak for itself. And I was like, well, here's what that looks like in terms of the actual case. So I sort of laid it out. Some of the similar stuff that we talked about last week. Our guy Kelly Eco had a good look at the Knicks' struggles coming off their loss to the Rockets, and them going into a little bit of a skid at a dangerous time. You know, Ben Rohrbach's got power rankings and sort of postseason table setting stuff. Everybody's churning right now. Everybody's cranking good stuff out. So check out yahoosports.com and all the NBA coverage we've got there. And our YouTube channel, right? You're going to make sure people go and follow that, find that, follow, subscribe, like, five stars, etc.
Yes, yes. Yahoo NBA is where it's at for the YouTube channel. Go subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. But also, just a reminder, we've got this YouTube channel dedicated to the Dunker Spot, Kevin O'Connor Show, and this show right here. You'll find all of the content at Yahoo NBA. So go check that out. Also want to give a shout out to Sarah, Brad, Emmy, Ryan behind the scenes. Thank you for making this show possible every week here at Yahoo Sports. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Big Number. Everyone, stay safe, enjoy the weekend, and we will be back next week.